Hey, and welcome to the Two Quarterback Experience. This is episode 19, the Carson Wentz Experience. We are underway. We are recording this on Sunday in the middle of week one. We're coming up on the end of the second slate of games, and so it has been a crazy day. There's a lot to talk about. There's still more football to come, but I will note that Greg, at Greg Sauce on Twitter, is out traveling Europe right now. I think he's in Germany as we speak. So rather than have Greg on the line, I've actually got a great co-host, James Simpson. He's on Twitter, at JS_football. He's a writer and an editor over at DLF. He's a consultant for Draft Consultants. And as you all know, he's a writer at 2QBs as well. So, James, how are you doing today?
I am doing great. Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
Oh, of course, of course. How is the kickoff weekend of football treating you?
I mean, if the Eagles win, I can go throughout my week and just be happy. I don't have to mope all day and all night and be sad. So, you know, things kicked off well. I'll wait and see the damage of the fantasy squads tomorrow. But for now, it was a good night.
It really was, and we'll talk a lot more about the Eagles in a little bit when we get to Carson Wentz, our focus quarterback. But This is a game where the team really could have gone any direction. Mm. So having them come up and be successful is a good thing. Mm-hmm. Before we really dive into it, I'm going to take a quick chance just to for an ad break. We want to thank Kipling Media, who was really invaluable to us, to 2QBs. Our site was having some issues. Good issues, just overloaded with traffic, and we were running up against memory capacity, and Kipling Media really stepped in, helped us out, got the site back up and running. So thank you guys for your patience if you saw the site down temporarily, but we just want to thank Kipling Media. You can find them kiplingmedia.com. They do a lot of web design services and marketing. This is completely an unpaid ad, but we are very grateful that they helped us keep the site up and running when we were in a really busy time at the end of draft season. So Thank you to Kipling Media. Let's go ahead and move on to talking about football, and we're recording on Sunday, but Thursday was the official kickoff with the Super Bowl rematch. What were your thoughts with just generally the game and how it all shook out with the Broncos and Panthers, James?
Just before we get into that, I did want to mention, I was going to throw that in the intro, but actually I wanted to say a big shout out to you because you may remember this, listeners won't know this, but on the day of the final day of my first ever dynasty draft, which actually happened to be a two quarterback league, is when me and you first spoke on Twitter. And
very
I actually
nice.
Came to you. Yeah, I came to you for advice, and I was panicking about the fact that I hadn't drafted any running backs high, and I'd built around quarterbacks and receivers. Turns out that was okay. but yeah, I just wanted to say shout out to you for that. Appreciate it. And that was before I was even at DLF, so, you know, come far, now we're working together, so it's been a good few years.
But very cool.
In terms of the actual game, I was extremely impressed with Trevor Siemian, actually. If you think about kind of the expectations versus what he actually did, he was hardly even worse than anything that they got out of Osweiler and Peyton Manning last year, which to me was one of the biggest things, was like, you know, he did enough to keep the team rolling and let the D do their thing, just let his players play, and he looked really good. What did you think?
Yeah, I'm with you. I was impressed. The Panthers, I don't think their secondary is quite where it was last year, losing Josh Norman, and just watching the game, it didn't look like they were quite as effective. But the front seven is just imposing, and the fact that Siemian could stand up to that pressure, the kind of shifting fronts, and really, like you said, just keep the team where they needed to be. He didn't carry them, but he wasn't making too many terrible mistakes. He had the one interception that really was his fault. It was a poor play. Yeah. He had another that was tipped up for an interception that could have happened to anyone. Maybe he should have just taken a sack, but it wasn't a terrible play. So overall, really one play stood out as terrible. And for the rest of the game, he was just kind of doing what the team needed against one of the best front sevens in the league.
Yeah, and I think this is a really interesting one in terms of like what to do with him moving forward, because you sort of got a couple of similar situations with Siemian and Case Keenum, two guys that are basically sort of, you know, that there's someone at their heels that the coaches could put in at any time. But the biggest thing with Siemian, I think, is the fact that the Broncos are a good team. If he plays reasonably okay, they'll be a winning team, and I don't think there'd be any reason to pull him unless he's really bad. Whereas with Case Keenum, it's kind of like the moment they start to falter a bit, I couldn't see any hesitation in the coaches putting in Jared Goff. So, you know, if you're kind of someone who's streaming that second quarterback or wondering which of the two you might keep or move on from or target, for me it would be Simeon out of him and Case Keenum. I don't know if you agree.
No, I absolutely agree with you. I think the offense is better suited in Denver. He's got better weapons there. And I think your point is a good one, that this is the Super Bowl champ. They've got a team that's very strong, and there's no reason they can't keep winning close games.
Yeah.
It's hard to move on at that point, whereas the Rams are going to be a 6-win, 7-win team, and at some point they will have to shake it up. I think that's a great point.
Yeah, I was just going to mention on that, it's like I do think as bad as the Rams will be, I just think it's all going to run through Todd Gurley, and I don't think anyone else will kind of benefit from that. Whereas sometimes you see a running game so strong that the passing game actually is helped out by that. I just don't see it with Gurley. With Keenum and the Rams, I just literally think it's all going to be whatever Gurley can do. That's how they're going to roll. And if they shut him out, then no one else is going to benefit at all.
Right. It's just the offense is not designed well, and then the weapons there are not inspiring at all. I mean, they just paid Tavon Austin crazy money, and he's never had a 1,000-yard receiving season.
Yeah.
And Kenny Britt, anyone on that offense, they just don't have the pieces or the offensive structure to really make a quarterback very interesting, regardless of talent.
Yeah, I mean, after all this, I can already picture them hanging 40 on Chip Kelly's defense, but we'll see about that.
That's very true. Like, we'll wait and see what the end of Monday night looks like. Crazy late. I mean, I know you're over in England, which listeners can probably gather from the brilliant accent. So games are always late for you, but that late Monday game is late even for us Americans.
I mean, I'll probably be up. I'll be able to watch. That'll be a morning game for me.
There you go. So other than that, Cam Newton, I don't know that there's a lot to say. He played well. He gave you the floor that you expect. And in a game that wasn't his best, he still was able to show that he is an elite asset. So
yeah,
people
were
talking.
That's it. I was just going to say, it's kind of there's a few quarterbacks where literally you kind of know what you're going to get. And unless there's a seriously extreme matchup, like a Denver, you know, who obviously caused him some problems, but he was still able to produce. But unless you get a seriously bad matchup, then, you know, you're always going to get the same thing.
Right, and that's where there were people talking about benching Cam for all sorts of bad quarterbacks this week, and you just don't, especially going into week one, don't think that you know the matchups. Just play your elite guys, and I think that's going to hold for him throughout the year.
That's true, and that's exactly what we were talking about with Philip Rivers earlier on today. I know you had that kind of debate about whether you should be playing him or not, and you decided to play him against the Chargers. Against the Chiefs, is that right?
Right, so anywhere I had him, I kept him in, even though most of the numbers I run looking at streaming quarterbacks said not to. I mean, the team was very poorly looked upon by Vegas. They were almost a full touchdown underdog. He's not done well in Kansas City. But I did decide to keep him in because at the end of the day, if you've drafted him as a low-end QB1, why are you benching him for a QB2 at this point?
Exactly.
Although at this, I guess we can go ahead and say the Keenan Allen knee injury, which has, I don't know if it's been confirmed that it's a torn ACL, but I think he's likely done for the year, the reports I'm seeing.
Yeah, I haven't seen any official, but, you know, as close to official as it can be. It's just
such sad news.
It's really bad. And the thing is, it's always like, you know, you come back to these the first week back, and there's so much excitement and so much happiness for someone like a Jordy Nelson who's getting back in his first touchdown, and you know, like, the long road that the players come to get back to where they are. And for Allen, it just sucks. He started out with, like, I think he had 6 catches in the first half, and it was just on that same pace that he was at the beginning of last year, where it just looks like he's going to have a monster season, and then that happens. So yeah, it's just such a shame.
Yeah, and it's so Philip Rivers ended up being a good play this week. He was looking good. He ended up with really pretty good numbers. But the loss of Allen really worries me going forward, because we saw how bad just the Chargers offense really fell off a cliff in the second half of last season with Allen out. They weren't passing well. It hurt their run game. Their line was another issue there. But I do think that the loss of Allen really changes the way this offense is going to look. How are you feeling about Rivers moving forward?
I'm concerned. I mean, I'm concerned because I think I had a similar expectation to anyone that was drafting him as kind of a late QB1, is that he would have that big season. The fact that this has happened means, you know, now I no longer feel like he's going to have that big season that we had the expectations for, which is probably the worst thing about it. I mean, I still think he's viable enough that he'll be in that sort of late QB1, QB2 range, but, you know, you didn't draft in late QB1 to be that. You were kind of, you had higher expectations. So I'm definitely a bit concerned. I do think it just, you know, it even showed up as fast as the second half, when they just 21-3 up at halftime and then couldn't get the ball rolling in the second half.
Right. That was really a tale of two halves in that game. And so we'll see. They will still throw a lot. I think you're right. He will be useful for fantasy, but without Allen, he has nowhere near the upside that we were all hoping for.
Yeah.
So another guy, just moving on, another guy that was drafted in some drafts as a low QB1, high QB2, with the thought of upside to be higher, is Jameis Winston. Mm-hmm. And you come from a primarily dynasty background, but play redraft as well. Winston has been really coveted in two quarterback dynasty, and yeah, people were kind of split on how to view him for redraft. Today, he looked fantastic against the Atlanta secondary, almost 300 yards, 4 touchdowns, really effective play from Jameis Winston. What is your view of him? Obviously, it's only one game, but how are you feeling about him just for this season?
Well, I mean, firstly, if I'm a Bucs fan, I'm just loving life. I think it's the first time they've had a winning record since 2012. So enjoy it. That's the first thing.
That's great.
But, I mean, it's obviously, I don't expect a 4 touchdown pace every game, but I don't see any reason why this kind of production would slow down. I mean, if you think about the fact that he's going to get the Saints twice and going to get Atlanta again, and I'm not entirely sure who they play the rest of the season, but he's looking good. He's got Mike Evans there. The running game is strong. You know, I don't see any reason why that would slow down. I mean, in Dynasty, you've got a really, really solid asset. And in redraft, like you said, you kind of, you probably got him more towards that. Maybe not necessarily Rivers area, but, you know, around about that as like a late QB1. You didn't necessarily have to pay up for him. But interesting how different the results were between him and Mariota, considering Mariota was kind of my go-to sophomore quarterback. But Winston looks really, really good.
He really does. And to your point about the schedule, Tampa Bay plays the NFC East.
Mm.
And so right in the middle of the season, in a 5-week span, he's going to play all 4 East teams, which traditionally, and I think probably this year as well, are not very strong against the passing game.
Yeah.
And so he looks like he could be set up for a really strong middle of the season, in addition to, like you said, the New Orleans and Atlanta games.
Yeah, and just on that point of secondary play in the NFC East, there was a play today where Corey Coleman got deep, and there are 3 Eagles defensive backs who didn't even decide to turn around and look at the ball. So
wow.
All you need to do is launch it up deep, got a shot. and, you know, Winston and Evans, I'd say, is a bit of a stronger combo than RG3 and Coleman at this point. So I'm sure they're looking forward to that one.
Right. And I don't know that we'd planned on talking about RG3 and Coleman a whole lot, or RG3 a whole lot. I don't know. You probably saw that game a lot more than I did. I've only seen a few highlights. We're going to get to the other side of the ball, but just looking at the Browns offense, what takeaways do you have?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing was that they did try to be quite creative. There were quite a few trick plays early. The issue was that none of them really came off. they had a, well, Terrell Pryor looked very good, but I don't think there was much improvement in RG3's game. And obviously that's like the forefront of their offense and they'll probably run through that. It didn't look like he'd particularly learned from his mistakes in not protecting himself. There was a play towards the end of the game where he's heading out of bounds and just kind of tried to truck someone on the sideline. He's hurt his shoulder. Seems like he's going to be okay for next week. But, you know, he came up kind of struggling, holding his arm, which is not good. You just don't want to see that. You know, he's put himself through enough before. But the good news was that, he still throws a beautiful deep ball. He's got Coleman, who's going to stretch the D. He's got Terrell Pryor, who will win those deep balls as well. And obviously Josh Gordon coming back eventually.
Right.
One definite big observation was that Duke Johnson was hardly involved at all, especially not as a rusher. Only a couple of catches, maybe three touches or three rushes, but that was something that we probably shouldn't be surprised by, considering of what the Browns have been saying and how they were utilizing him in the preseason. But very noticeable how quiet Duke Johnson was.
And I know RotoViz had a good article. I wish I could remember the writer off the top of my head, but just recently showing that rushing quarterbacks tend to throw less to their running backs than do pocket passers.
Yeah, I mean, I think it might have been Brian Malone, actually.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That but guy.
He's everywhere. But yeah, that was definitely good. But yeah, it's an issue. It just didn't seem like he was involved at all.
Right. And just pivoting again, there's so many to get through. I'm moving fairly quickly, but another rushing quarterback that we had a lot higher expectations for, Tyrod Taylor, had kind of a similarly or even more disappointing week, 111 yards, no touchdowns, only 11 rushing yards. And this was against Baltimore, who was a really favorable matchup all of last season. That has to concern you if you're a Tyrod Taylor owner. I mean, because his owners tend to be fanatical about him this year. I mean, there were kind of split opinions, but if you drafted him, you probably had to pay a fairly high price to get him. This is kind of a concerning opening to the season. I didn't get to watch this game either, but it really looked like the whole offense was struggling. What's your take on Taylor?
Well, I think he was one of those players where the people who were going after him were kind of hoping that the team might open things up a bit more, or he'd get a chance to throw the ball more, because it was like it was kind of a smaller sample size and he actually did really well with what he had, or sort of overdid expectations. But the thing is, it's not an offense that is going to turn into, you know, something that's going to air out. As much as I love Sammy Watkins, there's just not, you know, they're not exactly known. A Rex Ryan coach team with Greg Roman as his offensive coordinator is not exactly going to be known for a strong passing game, getting the ball deep and making their quarterback look really good. You know, it's kind of difficult to project that he actually improves so much and gets that volume passing. Obviously, it didn't look like anything was going well with the Russian game as well. But, you know, again, I'd be a little bit concerned, because I think everyone who's kind of drafting in that mid-range of quarterbacks is probably hoping that that quarterback's going to outperform that. Otherwise, you'd just leave it till later, because that's when you kind of know that if you take a quarterback late, that you're going to get someone who's going to produce better, or at least the same. But I think you'd probably be a bit concerned. Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, that whole offense, I am looking just at the box score, but I see 24 rushes and 22 pass attempts, so 46, give or take, offensive plays is just incredibly low. I mean, that is the exact opposite of a Chip Kelly offense right there. Mm-hmm. And I think that was kind of known coming into the year, is that Tyrod Taylor would have to survive on lower volume. But I don't think anyone foresaw it being such poor efficiency, and then that he just didn't add anything on the ground either. And so I would certainly be concerned if I was a Taylor owner, but I think in general, I would say that I'm not willing to panic and just trade cheap after 1 week on almost anyone.
No.
I don't know what your take is. Are you a guy that'll move quickly after the first week?
I don't think so at all. I think I definitely, you know, you kind of, especially so soon, you know, when you at least need a few days to kind of evaluate everything anyway. But yeah, early on in the season, as we mentioned earlier with playing Rivers against the Chiefs, we kind of don't know who the good defenses are yet. We don't know who the good matchups for quarterbacks and the bad matchups for quarterbacks will be. You know, this could signal that the Ravens are actually back to being a very strong team. It's, you know, they're only a few years removed from being a Super Bowl team. If Flacco's back and healthy, if their defense has improved, you know, they could turn out to be just a team that's very stout against the pass. So we just kind of don't know that yet.
Right.
So we'll always, you know, give them a chance against someone else, kind of see if this becomes a trend or if this was just a slow start.
No, and that's very true. And defenses are one of the hardest positions to predict year over year. They change so much. And so, yeah, it very well could be that, like you said, we've seen the Ravens be a good defense not long ago, and maybe they've gotten it back together just because things can change that much. I mean, we don't see that a lot at quarterback or receiver. You kind of know where people are going to be. There's a few exceptions, but defense historically year over year changes a whole lot. And so good point about not assuming you know kind of what to expect from any given defense.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of like, you know, if a team started the season against, say, a Trevor Siemian, and then turned out to be, you know, somewhere in the top five defenses against the pass, and then next week they were up against Aaron Rodgers, suddenly, you know, that whole projection of whether they're a team good against the pass just suddenly changes because they get thrown from somewhere, someone that's performed really well, to someone that's probably in the middle of the road. So it'll definitely take a good few weeks to kind of see that even out.
Right. One game where we and everyone else had the right read on the defenses was the Oakland and New Orleans game that ended up with 69 total points scored. That was just absolutely what everyone expected. Very little defense, high octane offenses, just down to the wire. Really a fun offensive kind of, it was a slugfest to watch this. I got to see some of this game, and I think we expected that on the defensive side. I was interested to see what the Raiders looked like this year and if they can kind of build off of the growth that we saw last year. And from what I saw in the game, I think Derek Carr really did. I was impressed with his game. I was impressed with how he led the offense, and they got the victory in New Orleans. I mean, just the gutsiness of going for two to win the game where you would lose if you didn't get it. That was just ballsy, and really, I like the confidence of this team. I do think the offense is really firing, and if its defense continues to be this bad, they will have to keep putting up points. So, all in all, I'm pretty impressed with Derek Carr after 1 week.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you going for it at the end there. It's just awesome. You know, it's so rare to see, and for someone to do it with that kind of the guts, like you say, and the fact that they actually, you know, dialed up a fade. It wasn't like, oh, we're going to go half-hearted and, you know, leave it up to an option. It's kind of, we're doing this. This is how we're going to score. It's either going to work or it's not, which I thought was awesome. Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you that Carr looked outstanding. My biggest, you know, obviously issue with that is that it's the Saints. And just as we mentioned, you know, they're the kind of team that will kind of make everyone look good. So it might take a couple of games to work out whether this is, you know, this is something Derek Carr is going to do all season, or if this was just that versus the Saints' performance. But you know, he looked like he was starting to really take even another step from last year in the preseason. The way he was spreading it out to Amari Cooper and Crabtree, it was kind of evident in the preseason that that's what he was doing. And yeah, the performance today was just outstanding. I thought, I think, you know, the touch on some of his throws really, really impressed me.
Yeah, he's one I will be watching moving forward. I was a little less optimistic on him than some, but he certainly has the pieces around him that he could be he could be very successful.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was similar to you. I was kind of, especially coming out of college, I didn't think he'd adapt so well. I thought great arm, but it seemed like not the rest of it. It might take a while for him to adapt to things. And it has taken a year or so, but he really looks like he's improving a lot. He looks very polished. He looks like he'll be, especially in fantasy, a very good asset. Just the fact that Amari Cooper and Crabtree are on the outside, it's, you know, those are touchdown-worthy targets every week. So, you know, you'd definitely be happy if you're a car owner right now.
Absolutely. So, just on the other side of that, I will say Drew Brees is who we thought he was.
Yeah.
He's very good at home and throws a lot. So yeah. I don't think there's a whole lot to break down there. I was interested to see the usage that Kobe Fleener was near invisible and Willie Snead stepped right back into the role he had last year. So kind of two players performing at different, I would say, at odds to how they were viewed in the preseason. I mean, Fleener was talked about as a potential top five tight end after the move.
Yeah.
And Snead was kind of a forgotten man. And so, obviously, it's 1 week. We'll see. But this certainly pours cold water on the Kobe Fleener hype that had been building all year.
Yeah, and I think sometimes we kind of assume that there has to be a specific person to fill a role. And there might be eventually, but, you know, it could just mean that Snead and Cooks just get way more of the ball, you know. It's doesn't need to be the same amount of targets or the same offense that they've always run, even though we know they're going to be successful. It could just be that, yeah, we'll just use the best guys that we have, and Cooks and Snead are definitely that at the moment.
Right. So in a different matchup that we've already talked about with Rivers, I want to touch on Alex Smith, who, if anyone hasn't checked it out, I would highly recommend our other podcast on this stream. So if we are the 2QB experience, they're the QB2 experience. They're talking about streaming that second quarterback position. And Jim and Sal did a great job last week and hyped Alex Smith, and I have written about him elsewhere. And I got to say, for three quarters, it looked disastrous. Mm-hmm. The Chiefs weren't doing anything. Alex Smith was struggling. He wasn't adding anything on the ground. He wasn't passing well. Spencer Ware was looking fine, but that was about the only thing that offense could do right. And then it clicked. I mean, the fourth quarter was unbelievable, and he ended up having a fantastic week, one of his best performances passing in his career. Mm-hmm. And so he really turned it on, but it was concerning. So I'm going to want to go back and look at this game more closely and see which Alex Smith is the one that I should really place the weight on. Is it three quarters worth, or is it the garbage time just chunking the ball? Because it did worry me very seriously there for three quarters.
Yeah, I mean, firstly, I'm extremely surprised that Sal is hyping Alex Smith in any fashion. but yeah, I mean, it was funny because on NFL.com, I think they have projections for the week, and Alex Smith was naturally sitting on waivers in a home redraft league, and he was projected for, I think it was 27 points. And I'm like, how is Alex Smith being projected as the most points in the league? Mm. And then he just rolls out something like this, where it turns out to be a monster game. I mean, I'd expect you'd get more of this. Realistically, I think he's at a point in his career. Obviously, he got a bit of the benefit from having overtime. And the actual game script of San Diego kind of losing momentum, probably feeling the effects of Keenan Allen's injury and kind of taking that very badly and not reacting very well, probably contributed to this exact massive performance towards the end. But I just think he's in a position now with Andy Reid in that offense where he's probably, I'd say, playing the best football of his year, definitely over the last couple of his career. Definitely over the past couple of years. And I don't see any reason why it would change. He's looking really good. He looks very comfortable. And he's just, again, he's just the perfect late-round quarterback. I can't really say anything bad against him at this point. It's not like he's been overvalued at any point in the last couple of years.
Right. He tends to be drafted at his floor every single year. Mm. And that there's value there. There isn't the upside. I mean, it's difficult to say that after he just had a 360-yard passing week, yeah. But this will likely be the most pass attempts and pass yards he has all season.
Mm-hmm.
But with Smith, you have such a guaranteed floor that is invaluable in these two QB leagues that you could just plug him in and feel very safe at that position versus, I mean, for instance, Jay Cutler this week, who Cutler is someone that many people like, and he played a rough defense and looked really bad.
Yep.
And ended up with not many fantasy points. And so Alex Smith is kind of the mirror of that, where he is stable, reliable, but probably doesn't have the same upside that Jay Cutler has, because Cutler can throw to Alshon Jeffrey if Kevin White hits, and he could have a 4-touchdown game within his range of outcomes, whereas Alex Smith doesn't. But Alex Smith's value is he's just so reliable. You kind of know what you're getting with him.
Exactly, and it is, you know, it is kind of very important, the fact that he can run. Just even a little bit, even if it's not huge, you know. Adding, it was 4 for 15 on the ground today with one touchdown, but even that ability to bust off a 10 or 20 yard run, that's just huge. That just adds to that floor, I think.
Right, absolutely. And 15 yards is kind of in his low range. He, like you said, he can have a 10 or 15 yard run if things break right. So we've been moving quickly, but let's move it even quicker through kind of a rapid fire section. This section is something, there's a lot of topics that we've been talking about for weeks and months over the preseason, things that we were expecting we knew, things we thought we had figured out. And looking back, we can kind of reflect on some of them and say, were they true? Were they not true? Do we need more time to tell? And so we can kind of move through these, but the first is Dak Prescott, who had just this enormous, enormous performance in the preseason. Anthony Amico for our site had been pumping him up even before he was drafted. And it's really, it looked good in the preseason. It looked great. And as we're recording this, Dak and the Cowboys are in a very close game with the Giants. Do you think that we have seen enough in week one to say that Dak is for real?
I think just in case he ends up throwing three interceptions in the final quarter, I will say we haven't seen enough yet. we'll kind of have to wait and see. But just based on the first half, it really looked like the offense itself wasn't struggling. It's not like there's an enormous step back when they don't have Tony Romo. I mean, the record without him is obviously very bad, but that's partly because of the other quarterbacks they've had in to replace him. I'm not surprised at all that Dak didn't come out and just immediately light it up like he did in the preseason. But the fact he was able to move the ball, he looked like he was moving very well, throwing on the run, you know, had a couple of rushing yards here and there, and was able to get Dez Bryant involved. It didn't seem like they were taking a step back, and I certainly wouldn't be worried about this offense moving forward. Is he going to be the guy that we saw in the preseason? We'll have to wait and see. But, you know, I think that offense can function really well. And we've seen Zeke Elliott score a touchdown already in this game. And he looks just like we thought he'd look. He looks outstanding. So I'm definitely kind of thinking that, yes, they're going to be okay with him.
Yeah, I think that's pretty well spot on, that he just needs to keep them functioning. This is a different situation than Trevor Siemian, because the Cowboys don't have the defense that the Broncos do. So the offense needs to be a little more productive, a little more successful. But I would say that one thing Dak has going for him is he has a very, very strong offensive line. He does have an elite wide receiver and a rookie who could be elite very quickly. We'll wait and see before really crowning him. But this offense, the pieces around him really could elevate Dak. And yeah, the fact I said coming into week one, I didn't want to play him.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, Anthony Amico has been all about Dak and has said this is a guy to trust, this is a guy with upside, and he has looked right through the preseason. Week one looked okay. I said I wanted to wait and see. And I'm kind of still in that same boat, that for fantasy purposes, I see enough to say you definitely have to roster him. There's no doubt about that. I don't think anyone can disagree. But I still want to see what he looks like when defenses get a little more creative, when defenses really find ways to, especially once they have film on him. I mean, each week they're going to have a little more they know about him. They're going to get a little more creative. And I want to see what he looks like there. Just watching the pregame shows this morning, hearing them say Tony Romo could get replaced, Ian Rappaport reporting the Cowboys are open to benching Tony Romo when he's healthy. I mean, I think we're moving a little fast. I definitely will say I want to wait and see a little bit more from Dak before I crown him as some sort of starter for the next decade.
Yeah, I agree, and I think we got basically fooled a little bit. I mean, it may turn out like he is the best rookie quarterback from this class, but we got fooled a little bit because of the timing of everything. I think there was a lot of, Dak's the first rookie quarterback to win the starting job, therefore, you know, he's ahead of the rest of them. Whereas it was, you know, it was purely circumstantial. Like, if Romo was healthy, Romo would be starting. I don't think Dak's performance in the preseason would have beaten Romo out for that starting job. And it's the same way that I don't necessarily feel like it's a knock on Jared Goff that he didn't perform that well in the preseason, they're not starting him or anything like that, because, you know, if it wasn't for the Eagles getting the most amazing offer for Sam Bradford, Wentz would still be on the bench. If it wasn't for Romo's injuries, Dak would still be on the bench, and we wouldn't be talking about Goff like he's behind everyone else. So definitely in terms of dynasty and even sort of thinking towards the end of this season for a late quarterback play that might just at least get a starting job and the volume, which you'll need in two quarterback leagues, I wouldn't sort of rule out Jared Goff at all at this point.
No, I think I agree with you. I think Goff is likely to end up as a starter. Like we said earlier, who knows if that's a valuable role with the Rams, but in two quarterback leagues, any starter has at least some value.
Hmm. Exactly.
So you had mentioned Marcus Mariota earlier in the podcast, just in passing, and I know you've been a big proponent of his. You've written some great things and just shown us reasons to like Mariota. And this offseason, the talk was the exotic smash mouth and everyone trying to figure out exactly what that meant. And it was an underwhelming performance, losing to a Sean Hill-led Vikings this week. Mariota had a pick six and a fumble six,
yeah.
Maybe consecutive drives. I'm not positive on that part, but not real inspiring. His box score looks okay, but the offense kind of struggled here. Where do you stand on him and the Titans going forward?
Yeah, it's a really tough one because basically I think they got a little bit of a crowning in the preseason as obviously being a team that's very improved. They looked really good. You know, that offense looked like, oh, okay, they're going to run over everyone. That's going to open things up for Mariota. Tarjay Sharp looks outstanding. You know, they're an offensive juggernaut now. And then they come up against a Minnesota D in the regular season. And, you know, things are a little bit different. I don't think this changes too much moving forward. You don't want to see that from someone who you think's expecting, you know, I was expecting him to take a bit of a step this season. I still am. But I think that's quite concerning when you kind of get beat up that bad. The thing is that it didn't necessarily change the look of the offense that we expected in the preseason at all. It's just the fact that Minnesota were that much better than them. So the kind of things that we thought in the preseason, that Tarjay Sharp was going to be the top receiver, that happened. It looked like just in terms of snap count, he was on the field 64 snaps compared to Harry Douglas was next with 37. And then Rashad Matthews was down with 35. So we know that kind of seems like it's going to happen. But overall, it's just a very disappointing performance. But I think it does also say that maybe the Vikings could actually make some noise, even though they lost their starting quarterback.
Yeah, you are an Eagles fan and have watched Sam Bradford, his highs and his lows, for a little while. If he becomes a starter in Minnesota, which let's just make that assumption, whether it's right or wrong, if he does, what would you expect him to look like as a fantasy asset?
Well, the thing here is that the trade obviously was met with a bit of disillusionment. It was obviously a bit of a crazy one. You know, you don't see those kind of trades often.
Right.
But I just, I think it was great for both teams right away, because I think Wentz is better than Bradford, but I think Bradford is better than Hill. So obviously both teams are kind of getting an upgrade. Bradford actually, as an Eagles fan, I would have been okay with him, with rolling with him this season. I think he did come along quite a lot towards the end of last season. And I think this is an offense that would have, the Eagles offense now would have suited him a lot better than what Chip was trying to do with him. So I can see, I can see him being a viable starter. He's got some good weapons there. It's not like they're going to ask him to do too much. Again, we know that they are going to rely on Adrian Peterson. He obviously didn't perform too well today statistically, but it's not like McKinnon was taking carries from him or there's any chance that that's going to happen anytime soon. They're just going to pound the ball. That defense is going to be, cause havoc. And I think Hill will be an improvement. Bradford will be an improvement on Hill, and he could be one of those kind of Jay Cutler style, not necessarily with the upside, like Jay Cutler, Osweiler, where, you're not expecting anything big out of them, but if they have a couple of good games here and there, it really does help you.
No, I think that's pretty reasonable. Two skill position players that I'm going to lump together, mm-hmm. and we can kind of discuss them separately, but both because they've had hype for years past and we really haven't seen it materialize and the hype built again this preseason. The two are Christian Michael, who's in Seattle, and Kevin White for Chicago. Christian Michael has just struggled to have his head in the game. He's been cut and then brought back to Seattle. Kevin White had the injury that kept him out all last year. But for both, the hype is really built leading up to week one. And I would say that both kind of fizzled to varying degrees in week one. Christian Michael, I don't have it in front of me. I think he was like 15 for 66. The whole offense kind of struggled against the Dolphins in a surprise. And then Kevin White really didn't look like he was a big part of the offense from the parts of the game that I saw. Mm-hmm. So kind of with those two, I still am interested in them, but it is something where we've seen them struggle. Not White, I should say. We've seen Christian Michael struggle before, and seeing him get nearly the same number of carries as Thomas Rawls this week worries me for what his role is going to look like moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. And I think with Christian Michael, the thing for me was that I don't think that we saw too much more or too much different than we'd seen from him before in the preseason. We just saw him actually get a chance to run with the first team and get a lot of volume. So we've seen those, we've seen the fact that he's explosive and, powers into people. He's got the speed, he's got the balance, all of these things. We've seen that in preseasons past, but it's just been, a flashy play here and there. The fact that Rawls was out just meant that he was the guy that got the chance to roll with the first team. I think the team's been saying all along that Rawls are going to be the starter when he comes back, and I don't think there would particularly be any reason based on what he showed in the preseason to change that, because Rawls is the one that's performed in real games and in the real season before, whereas Michael, again, we've just kind of seen those flashy things, but I didn't see a completely different player that's suddenly ready to go. I wouldn't be surprised if Rawls is taking a full workload as soon as next week or the week after, assuming he's healthy and is okay after today. Michael could still have a role, but I think it was kind of very situational, the fact that he got a lot of this opportunity. And the reason we talked about him so much was because he's one of those, seems to be a very big name to kind of debate.
Right, and he's an exciting athletic talent. Mm. We haven't seen him do it on the field, like you said, but he's one that the metrics community has always loved, and so it's just hoping he can figure out the on-the-field stuff, because he certainly has the talent, like the pure talent, that he could succeed if everything lines up right.
Yeah, and with Kevin White, I still kind of want to treat him like a rookie, and he was making rookie mistakes out there. Obviously, he didn't play all of last season, and you'd hope that he'd be a bit more ahead of the curve than he is. But he's still out there for the first time in that game environment and kind of learning on the go. The issue today was that, you know, all throughout the preseason, we've kind of heard that he's not up to speed in terms of playbook and the connection and kind of getting things right. And then today he had a false start, he had a drop, maybe a couple of drops. He ran the wrong route and then Cutler got intercepted on that one. And after the interception was made, he didn't even kind of first thing try and go tackle the guy. He kind of just looked bemused and looked back at Cutler. So things like these are obviously a lot more concerning than just not actually putting things together. Like, these are a lot of big mistakes. But I think he's kind of young in the NFL. He's an older prospect, but he's still young in the NFL, and I think he's got enough talent that he can perform. It just does scare me for this year. You know, if he's not up to speed now, when does that happen? Do we have the patience to wait for that?
I'm with you that I think treating him like a rookie this year makes sense. It worries me a little more than a normal rookie just because he's been on the team and around the playbook and around the way of being an NFL professional for an extra year. And so if he still doesn't understand the playbook, if he's still making mental mistakes, that worries me more than it would for, say, a Corey Coleman on the field.
Yeah.
Just because he has been around. But I'm with you that I still am interested moving forward, and the Bears really struggled against a good defense this week, so maybe they'll look better when they have some easier matchups. The other side of that, a true rookie on the other side of the ball, Will Fuller, had a really strong game. He dropped what would have been an 80-yard touchdown that he had beat the coverage. It was a beautiful Brock Osweiler pass, hit him right in the hands. Was nothing but green in front of him, and he just dropped it, which is kind of people's main concern with Fuller. But he bounced back from that. He was very prominent in the offense and put up a good stat line. This is someone that I don't think got enough hype in the preseason, and it looks like that is about to change. I expect he's someone that is a high priority on waivers this week.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Kevin O'Brien over at DLF has just been pumping out, like, you know, hyping Fuller all summer, and he's had a couple of articles and kind of turned me around on him, that basically, you know, you're going to live with the drops. Like, the drops are going to be there. You know, there might be a chance that he does eventually get over those and improve on that, and I'm sure he will. But, you know, even when you're living with those drops, he's still getting open. He's still got outrageous speed. And he looks, you know, he looks taller and stronger than kind of expected. Like, he looks like a legit NFL receiver, you know, who's going up and grabbing the ball and taking it away from people.
Yeah, I felt the same way. Just the first, when I flipped on the game, I didn't know who he was at first. He looked like he had the build of someone that's been in the league for a while.
Yeah, you kind of, because, you know, you see it with rookies sometimes, that they just look, you know, just look a little bit skinnier, a little bit, you know, not ready to go, where he looks like he is. I think this definitely means, you know, he's a hot waiver wire addition if he wasn't already picked up with anyone. I would say that it was specifically a good matchup against the Bears. But at the same time, I do think this might take away a little bit from DeAndre Hopkins just moving forward. Definitely bodes well for Osweiler's prospects, but, you know, if Fuller's there, beating people deep and stealing touchdowns, what's Hopkins going to do?
Right, right. It's just how one thing that's good is just the volume that Bill O'Brien is. Last year, with very bad quarterbacks, I think they were a top five pass attempt team. And so if Osweiler can play well, there may be the volume to support two receivers. It just kind of remains to be seen. We had a couple other players we had talked about hitting on, but I want to kind of move us along. I want to talk about the league that you and I are in a couple of leagues together, but I want to talk about the two quarterbacks league for our site, because we put together kind of last minute a staff league, a 14-team super flex league, and haven't had a chance to talk about it. Greg and I didn't record last week. He's on the road, as I mentioned. And so we had a full draft. We're starting week one. I feel like it's an appropriate time to kind of break down how it went. So for you, what was the experience like drafting a 14-team league?
Well, it was so interesting because I kind of I thought with the quarterback position, you know, I like to get one kind of mid-range quarterback and then someone else towards the end of that QB2 range. But I didn't expect it to be as far towards the end of that QB2 range as it was. Basically, I was picking at the turn. I ended up at 101 and then a 2-3 turn. And after the 4-5 turn, between 4-5 and 6-7, in two rounds, there were 15 quarterbacks taken.
It was unbelievable.
It was just, I've never seen anything like it. So I was debating taking Marcus Mariota at that 4-5 turn. And I was like, oh, well, you know, maybe he'll come back around. If not, then it'll be someone, you know, a few quarterbacks. We went all the way down, funnily enough, to Carson Wentz. But he was, you know, obviously taking 16 quarterbacks after round about that area that I was looking at. But it was crazy. I mean, it was really enjoyable for me. It's obviously good to be in a league with the staff here. Definitely happy with my team so far. But how did you find it?
Yeah, that run on quarterbacks was absolutely incredible, which, I don't know, it's really funny for a site that we preach wait on quarterback. This did not evidence that, and I think that really speaks to the difference between a 12-team league and a 14-team league, where you really can see the impact of these smart owners knowing that they could be stuck with only one startable quarterback if they wait very long. And also, I think some of it is not to our credit, just the panic of, well, he took a quarterback, so I've got to take a quarterback, and we kind of let that snowball a little bit. So I think it's kind of both there. I will say I do not like my team. I don't like how it was drafted. I went more running back heavy than I had wanted to. And right after drafting Jamal Charles, it seems like almost that same day, the news started breaking that he's not as healthy, he's not going to be playing. And so when you have a high pick like that not performing at the start of the season, it's concerning. And so we'll see what happens moving forward. I am still optimistic, but it wasn't the draft I had planned on. But like you said, just these long, you have to watch. I mean, 14 teams, there's so many picks between your picks that you really can't plan ahead what your next pick is going to be. It's so much determined by who goes and which players are picked. And so I went in with one plan and kind of came out with a different sort of team. But it'll be interesting to see how the whole season plays out for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And 14 teams hard. And then being on the turn in a 14-team league, it's just crazy. I've been on the turn in a 12-team before, and you kind of know that you can just kind of switch off for a while and then reassess who's going to be kind of in the area. But this really was very strange. And it also sort of reaffirmed to me that if you are at the turn, or if you know you're not going to be picking for a while, you kind of have to reach for people. And it's something that I kind of preach to be okay with. It's like, if you know you're not going to get another shot at someone, don't just draft someone that's there because they're, you know, the most quote unquote valuable pick. You know, just because someone's the top of a list in an ADP or a rankings list doesn't make them the pick you should make.
Yeah, go get your guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of a mentality.
Yeah. So I think I kind of felt that when I didn't take Mariota in that 4-5, because I was like, you know, it would have been a bit of a reach at that point, I think. There weren't too many quarterbacks that had gone before him, or it wasn't at a point where he was a clear value. But as soon as, you know, it came round and I was thinking, am I even going to get a starter at this point? You know, especially if you're on the turn, just, you know, just take the guys you want to take and you'll be happy with it. That was kind of the lesson learned for me. I mean, I was lucky enough that, similar to your Charles news breaking very quickly, by the time I rolled round to my pick after that turn, Wentz was announced starter. I think the Bradford trade just happened a couple of hours ahead, and I was like, wow, well, this just works out perfectly.
Yeah, that worked out beautifully. I mean, initially it was unclear. It looked like, I mean, my assumption at least was that Chase Daniel was going to be the beneficiary in the short term. And then as things progressed over the week, it became clear that Carson Wentz was, I mean, he was named the starter. He was going to get the opportunity. And yeah, so you immediately had a starter where it looked like I said earlier in the podcast, it looked like he was going to be inactive for week one. And all of a sudden you have a starter. And Carson Wentz is our spotlight quarterback with good reason. You're an Eagles fan. You've watched Wentz. You've really thought about him once, particularly, I imagine, once your team drafted him.
Yeah.
So before we even get into him being a starter and into week one performance, how did you feel about the move to get Wentz, the cost, the choice of quarterback, kind of the whole draft day? What was your take on that?
Well, I mean, I was ecstatic. I'm just, in general, I'm not a fan of settling for mediocre. I'm not a fan of saying, we might be okay with X player. You should always be looking to get the best, especially when you're a team that's kind of been rolling through quarterbacks for years and haven't had one that's like a clear standout. I also love the fact that if you've got a chance, if you're close enough to the top of the draft, and there's a quarterback that you like, you better go up and get them. Mm-hmm. I think Howie Roseman kind of felt that we might not be, the kind of attitude that I love is we might not be that close to the top of the draft for a while. So we're going to go up and get someone that we like. Absolutely love the move. You kind of know from listening to this that I'm not the hugest fan of Bradford, so... I was definitely happy that we were kind of not settling with that. But you also kind of realized when the trade happened why the Eagles invested so much at the quarterback position. It wasn't just sort of a silly move to invest in three quarterbacks. It's because now you're in a position where you've got value at the most valuable position in the league, and it allows you that kind of flexibility that they did with the trade. Absolutely love the move. I've been excited since then. So obviously it was pretty awesome to see a good starting performance.
Right, and that's kind of where we'll go next, because Carson Wentz, we can kind of skip over the preseason and just jumping to week one. I really didn't know what to expect of that whole game. Cleveland is a new offense, new quarterback. Philadelphia is a new quarterback, new offense. And both, I would say, not great defenses. Philadelphia has been real opportunistic and has some talent. Cleveland has just been bad all across the board. And so I really didn't know what to make of the game, what to expect. And I have come away very impressed with the Eagles, with the way that team looked as a whole, with the way Wentz handled the offense. And I'm pretty impressed. Granted, it is a bad defense they were up against, but still, he far outperformed what I expected him to do this week. So you, because you had a much better focus on the game today than I did, go ahead and give me your thoughts. What did you see as you were watching?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think it was a very strong performance. I think Cleveland did kind of make the Eagles look better than they were today. The Eagles executed very well, but Cleveland just, you know, there are a few things. They went for it on a fourth down where they probably shouldn't have. Basically, they did a fake punt in their own territory. It was kind of not the time to do that. And they just didn't exactly cause us enough problems that you'd expect out of an NFL team. That sounds like a very harsh insult. But yeah, they didn't cause the Eagles too many problems. So it kind of, the actual result of a 29-10 dominating an NFL team probably is a bit, you know, you wouldn't expect them to do that every week moving forward. But in terms of Wentz, he definitely looked like a player worthy of the second overall pick. It's funny because there's a large group of people who were expecting Chase Daniel or thinking that Chase Daniel should start to give Wentz time. I think the biggest thing for me was always that he came from, you know, a place that was running a pro-style offense. It's not like it was all completely alien to him. He's an older guy, a bit more mature. It kind of, and we also kind of thought from day one, they've been saying in camp that he's ahead of the curve. You know, he's ready. I don't think that chance would have come. They were happy for him to wait, to sit on the bench, but it wasn't necessarily about him. It was more about the fact that they've got Bradford and Bradford was going to be the starter. It wasn't kind of a knock on Wentz. So I wasn't at all surprised when he was starting over Daniel. But I can see why all the coaches have been raving about him, and I can see why Jordan Matthews was smiling all week saying, you better watch out on Sunday. Because Wentz looked like he has got a very good chemistry with Matthews already. Jordan Matthews had 14 targets, 7 catches, 114 yards, and a touchdown.
And playing from all over the field, too. He wasn't just a slot receiver.
Yeah, one of the things was that you could definitely notice that he was moving around. I think the majority of his catches did actually come from the slot. But just the fact that they had that variance was kind of like, oh, okay, it's a new element to the offense. I think one of the things in the preseason, a kind of story, was that the Eagles receivers are really bad. Yeah, and, you know, I wasn't necessarily debating against that. You know, they didn't look very good. They've all got their flaws, but they've also all got their strengths. And Matthews just is that kind of volume guy. Aguilar showed today that he's going to be that deep threat. And it looks like, you know, there could be some viable fantasy options there.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that, well, let me rephrase. Greg and I have talked recently about just how bad the wide receiver depth chart gets after the top three, that there's really not much there. And so it was interesting that, you saw that so clearly today. They were the only three receivers with catches, Jordan Matthews, Nelson Agholor, and Doriel Green Beckham. And an injury would really hurt, but it also really helped that Aguilar looked like a good player. I mean, the talk was so bad this offseason that there was worry he wasn't even going to be on the field from some camps. And so to see him perform well, to see him get a touchdown, and if they can get Green Beckham to play to his ability level, those top three could be a really interesting trio.
Yeah, and I mean, Aguilar doesn't need to be solid fantasy asset to add a lot to that offense. You know, he only had a few catches today, but just the fact that he has that deep element, you know, that adds a lot for Carson Wentz. And also, I think Matthew's issues have been overstated, because similarly to Will Fuller, Matthew's drops the ball once in a while. It's very frustrating as a fan. It's probably very frustrating for Wentz and for all fantasy owners. The first play of the game, he dropped the ball. But then he comes back and he'll still catch a bunch of them.
Right, and he is such a, I think very highly of Jordan Matthews. I think he's a talented guy, and clearly the team and Wentz are gonna prioritize him, so that was good to see. Do you expect this is kind of Wentz? I think it's hard not to, right? I think this is Wentz's job going forward. Do you see any reason do you fear that he will get benched for Daniel absent an injury?
No, there's no fear that he's going to be benched for Daniel. I don't think, I think he's got enough talent, and the only reason would be injury. I think even if they're doing badly, it will just be a chance for him to learn. I don't think they'd put him in straight away if they didn't expect there to be struggles along the way as well, or at least if the team didn't expect him to be able to handle those struggles. But I certainly wouldn't expect a performance like this every week. Go ahead.
I was going to say he's QB10 right now. The second slate of games just ended, so there's three games left, six quarterbacks left, and he's QB10 just kind of standard scoring.
Yeah, so, you know, I can see him obviously being a solid fantasy quarterback. I just think there will be some struggles. There'll be, you obviously didn't throw a pick today, didn't fumble the ball. There were some times where both of those things could have happened. He put himself in a bit of trouble with holding onto the ball for a bit too long early. He also had quite a few passes batted down at the line, which he needs to worry, you know, he needs to look at that just in case a couple of those could be tipped and taken back. And there were a few times as well where he was kind of very flat-footed, where you'd expect him to be a bit more on his toes and ready to throw, ready to move. One of the things that did surprise me was that it sounded like the team would put in a few more designed runs for him. And I don't even know if he ran at all today or had...
Yeah, two rushes for 1 yard.
Yeah, it was definitely... There was nothing designed there, and he didn't look to do that at all. That's something that I would expect to change at some point, because I think that's an element of his game that's kind of been overlooked from a fantasy standpoint. He can score rushing touchdowns.
Sorry. I wonder... I didn't watch enough of the game to say, but I wonder if the rib injury is part of that, that they wanted to give him another week or two to really let it heal, not risk a re-aggravation of the injury. Didn't he miss the last three preseason games with that injury?
Yes, he did. Yeah, he only played that first Tampa Bay game. And I think they said, you know, he'd probably be ready to go in that fourth one if it was a real game. But again, if he's still recovering from a rib injury, yeah, there's no reason to put him through any extra pain.
Right. So every week we do kind of a quarterback finish game, and so let's do that first, and then afterwards I'll ask how you value him both in redraft and dynasty. But just first of all, how many weeks do you expect that Carson Wentz will finish in the top 10 this year? And I think it's safe to say he's not this week. He's number 10 with Carson Palmer, Kirk Cousins, Ben Roethlisberger. I doubt he's a top 10 quarterback this week, but how many do you think he does finish with this year?
I will go with 15.
No. Conservative estimate.
Conservative. Realistically, I'd expect a few big games, I'd say around about 5 or 6.
Okay.
I think there's a chance of that. I think that's quite optimistic.
I think that's the high end. Would you agree that...
Yes.
Okay. I mean, that'd be fantastic for his owners, who he was essentially free for most people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's very optimistic, but I think it's also... he didn't look like a rookie quarterback, I'll tell you that. So right. I kind of expect him to be straight in, and I think he's better than a lot of the quarterbacks that are down in that sort of 25 to 30 range when you're just talking about in terms of talent on the just talent as a NFL quarterback. So he could certainly get, you know, good production.
Right. See, I think I'm going to be much more bullish for our next question, top 20.
Mm-hmm.
But for top 10, I think I'm only going to say, I think if I'm being honest, I probably only say 2.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. He didn't look like a rookie. I think that he is going to impress. He's going to surprise some people. But I don't know that in this offense, the Peterson-led offense with the weapons he has, I don't know that he has those elite weeks in him, or I don't know that he'll get there frequently enough for me to want to say he's going to be a top 10 option, just because top 10 really means you need to be at the 300 yards, 2 touchdowns, really 3 to feel safe. And I don't know that he's going to do that on a regular basis. So I'm going to say 2 there.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I think I'm definitely blinded by the
fandom
in some ways.
Right. Well, what about top 20? What about how often do you think he's a QB2?
You know, he might have basically a good amount of up and down days. So probably around, I'll say 8 or 9. I'm saying 5 or 6 of the all. 9 or 10.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I was leaning towards saying 9 myself, because I do think he showed enough that makes me think this is a stable enough offense, a good enough passer. I think it'll be interesting. I think he will have fantasy value more than I probably did before this week. So to that point, with or without the fandom included, how are you valuing Carson Wentz? Let's start with free draft. Just what do you think of him for this year, and what would you pay to go get him? And then after that, we can transition to dynasty.
Yeah, I mean, I feel there's an upside, and there's sort of talent above what you might be able to get him for at the moment, at least in redraft, because I think a lot of owners might be a bit hesitant because he's a rookie and because it was against Cleveland. So there might be a chance for you to move a kind of later drafted quarterback to go and get him. But at the same time, there are veterans in redraft that I would probably just roll with because there's a lot more of a risk with Wentz. In terms of dynasty, he's probably, I'm trying to think of the range he would be, but I definitely think he's way on the uptick. I think he's still a little bit underrated. All three quarterbacks, all three rookies, Wentz, Lynch and Goff, were all a bit undervalued heading into this year because it seemed like all three would sit in dynasty. So his value might have skyrocketed in the last month or so, but he's probably still being valued below where he should be.
Yeah, and as far as should you wait or should you not, if you're targeting him, he plays Chicago and Pittsburgh his next two games. So two more defenses you like to play against, and so you may not see a dip. If you're one of those owners that says, I don't want to buy him after a good week, I want to wait for a bad week, you may not see that for a while because he has two easy matchups and then a bye, and then Detroit, who's not a terrifying defense either. So he may not have that difficult week until week seven, Minnesota. It could be a little while. And to that point, I will note, Jameis Winston, I was somehow looking at the 2015 schedule. They don't play the NFC East this year, so they play Dallas. Yeah. But I completely had somehow pulled up last year's schedule rather than this, so I just want to take that back. With the Eagles, they do have a really favorable start to the season, and so it's a good way to ease Wentz in.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So that's kind of nearing the end of things. We're a little beyond an hour, but I think it was understandable. It's week one. There's a whole lot. We could have spent so much longer even. I want to talk just a little bit about what to expect at 2QBs over at the website. And there's a whole lot. We are slated for more than 10 articles each week, kind of on a recurring basis with some more scattered in. I know you're writing one that is called Stock Watch. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you're going to be writing about there? And then also anything you're going to be writing at DLF?
Yeah, I mean, the Stock Watch is kind of still debating on the name. It might be basically going to be focusing on two quarterbacks each week, two performances by quarterbacks each week, kind of notable performances, what it means for the player themselves, what it means for the players around them, and how to kind of approach them moving forward. So we'll have a little look at how they performed, you know, where they were good, where they were
fair
good.
Odds. We see Carson Wentz this week.
I think there's a good chance. I'll try and make sure that he's not the target every week. but yeah, I think it'll be one of the two tomorrow. So that's something I'll be doing there. Over at DLF, I've basically got I've started the Dynasty Diaries, which is essentially opening up all of my, the leagues I'm in and, how I'm approaching them, what I'm doing. And, that's kind of just to help everyone get a bit of an insight into how I operate. I've got a good variety of leagues that have all sorts of different strategies. There's 2QB, there's Superflex, there's ones with contracts, Debbie players, 16 team to a 10 team. And I think it's really helpful for any readers, any dynasty players to kind of see how to approach different leagues and what to do with them. So those are the kind of things that I'm doing at the moment.
Yeah, I really like that series and just the way you're approaching it, because I think there's at least two reasons it's beneficial. One is just so that readers can learn from your experience. You play, like you said, in a variety of leagues. You do well. You are good at this. And then also it's just good to see how someone else thinks, because it's very easy for us to get kind of ingrained in our way of approaching leagues and assume that must be the best way. And just seeing the full thought process for someone, how someone approaches their leagues, can make you reflect and say, should I change things? Should I view things differently? And it kind of can open up your perspective, which is a really healthy thing.
Yeah, sure. And I think it's also just, I just love variety. I think it might remind some people to, or encourage some people to play in some leagues with different settings, crazy settings, and just kind of try a different strategy here and there, because all strategies can work. You just need to, you know, work out a way to make it work and get the right players. So, yeah, definitely enjoy that part of it, and I'm hoping readers will enjoy it too.
For sure. We also are doing a ton of coverage of Fantasy Aces, which is the two quarterback DFS site. So we have some great DFS writers that are talking about cash plays, GPP plays, quarterback matchups, etc. Really knocking it out of the park there. And I cannot emphasize enough, the one thing that is really helpful if you're into DFS is that Fantasy Aces shows ownership percentages after the Thursday night games lock. And so whereas FanDuel took that away this year, you can actually, through Fantasy Aces, see their ownership percentages. And so Sal is doing a great job to collect those and post those. It's not perfect one-to-one. It especially isn't good for quarterbacks because Fantasy Aces being two quarterback, the ownership percentages are very off compared to what you'll see at the major sites. But it is helpful to see running backs, wide receivers, to think through who's going to be high-owned each week. I will be writing a weekly article called Moving Targets, just looking at target numbers and market share. And by no means will I cover all 32 teams, but kind of picking out some patterns or some trends or things where we might be able to find value just based on what the targets are doing. So there's going to be plenty of the site. Go ahead. Sorry, James.
I was just going to say nice. Sounds good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I spend so much time looking at quarterbacks that I think it'll be interesting to see where the quarterbacks are throwing and just to whom.
Yeah, well, so, you know that Carson Wentz is throwing to Jordan Matthews every play. I can tell you that for free.
As he should. Anything else you want to discuss before we kind of sign off with our closing things here?
No, I mean, the biggest thing I would say is react to week one, but don't overreact. So there's no need to panic about your stars that haven't performed. There's no need to panic about people that you really like to perform for another team or certain things that happen in week one, because week one's always crazy. I mean, we've seen it as an amazing week of all sorts of crazy things going on. So I'd say just, kind of sit back, reassess things, and start looking for trends in week two, because week one is, things are different. I always remember there was just a few years ago when, like, Kevin Ogletree scored three touchdowns in the game, I think, and suddenly he was the hottest player on waivers, and I don't think he did anything else for the rest of the year. So there's kind of, let's react to things, but let's not overreact to everything. So just assess each situation individually.
I think that's a great mantra for this week, both with waiver picks and trades. React, but don't overreact. It's a very small sample size at this point. Well, I will say I'm really grateful that you took the time to come on the podcast, James. You mentioned that we've been talking football for a few years now, and I always enjoy it, but it's also nice just to get you in audio form and have a conversation about the games. And so thank you very much for taking the time to come on.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Loved it. It's happily come on again.
Yeah, and you guys can follow James on Twitter. Like I said before, he's at @JS_football. His writing is at our site and over at DLF, Dynasty League Football. You can follow me on Twitter at Lake2QBs, and my world-traveling co-host, Greg, is at Greg Sauce. We always would appreciate it if you want to rate and review the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever else you might listen to the podcast. And anytime you have questions, hit us up on Twitter at our individual accounts or at the 2QB's account. If you have longer form questions, one thing that we really enjoy is answering kind of detailed questions, and you can send those by email, 2QBs@gmail.com. So you have to spell it out, TWOQBS@gmail.com. So thanks for tuning in. It was an exciting week one, and react, but don't overreact. I think that's the best way to leave it. And we are out.